Welcome to the Reflex Blue Show number 89. I am Donovan Beer, your host. I am with co-host Ben Luters again today.
Hello, everybody.
And we're told, is this right? Kevin McConkey, you just said you were on radio, so we like brought in a ringer. You're going to make us all sound bad?
That's absolutely not true, but it was high school, so it was a pretty formative period of my life, and I did have a little radio show that was broadcast on WGHS 88.5.
Was your voice still changing or something?
No, it wasn't, but my musical tastes were, so it began with a lot of OMD and ended with a lot of punk rock, so it was quite the show.
So that still puts you at way more radio experience than us. we've never had call letters to give out or something.
So. I don't know, but you guys have been doing this show for like, what, 10 years or something ridiculous?
No. In fact, we've only been doing this now for like 6.5 years or so. And the last time you were in Omaha was 2004, if I remember correctly. Is that right? Judging the show here. So we weren't even doing the show then. If we were doing it 10 years ago, you would have been on the show like 8 years ago.
It only took you 6 years to ask me back. I must have made a pretty good impression.
Not too shabby. Now, we do want to talk a little bit about music. We were told on the last show that we did with Steve Gordon when he was here that you say that The Far Side is the best hip-hop album of all time.
Actually, Bizarre Ride 2, The Far Side's album from 1992, is hands down the best hip-hop album of all time. And if by talk about this album, you mean admit it's the best album of all time, and by admit it, you mean unequivocally endorse it, yes, we can do that.
I'm not even sure if I know of this album, because the only hip-hop we really have here in the office is Tone Loc.
You're embarrassing yourself.
No, it's on vinyl, and it is awesome.
That's right. No, Tone Loc. Called Medina, right there.
Tone Loc is great, don't get me wrong. I mean, Steve will go off on Tone Loc, but I mean, I will say that that's Steve Gordon, by the way, for listeners who haven't heard the show 8,000 times.
I know.
Yeah. But Bizarre Ride 2 is in a league of its own. I mean, it is so advanced. It has some of the best snaps. It's the funniest album. It's one of the first self-deprecating albums. So that's not all about, you know, shooting shit up and, you know, hookers and all that. It's really, you know, there's some butts involved, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, it's just it's a brilliant album from the music, and you couldn't make it today because of the copyright laws. So it's kind of like Paul's Boutique in that sense, in that it couldn't be made again, but enjoy it for what it is. Plus, Fatlip is insane, and the fact that they got Spike Jonze to do a video was, and that was one of those first real serious, you know, we film it all in reverse and then play it forward videos, and it is brilliant. If anybody who doesn't know Spike Jonze, check that out.
And when you said your musical tastes have been changing since then, you mean that it's gone from The Far Side to what I hear is like American Idol?
Yeah, exactly right. No, actually, you know, it's funny. My wife is a musician and a conductor and composer, and some of the people that she has worked with, that we've worked with after they graduated through her program, went on to be on American Idol, and they did pretty good. They made it to Hollywood. So while I certainly don't love the machine that it is, it does give some opportunities to some people who deserve it, so kudos.
And you brought your wife with you to Howl last year to open up your talk with her singing. Is that what I hear? I heard, because we were talking to Justin during the thing, and it sounded like there was a lot of ruckus going on next door, which would be in your room.
So you went to Justin's session instead of mine?
No. We spoke to Justin's. I believe we were actually recording a podcast. I bailed on Justin's, too.
Yeah, we bail on everybody.
I was in like a back room recording a podcast with somebody I missed during that time slot, so I was unable to go.
We don't actually listen to speakers at conferences. We just do the show.
You're too big for that. You grow beyond the speaker thing.
Yeah, we cannot sit still for that long.
No, hey, I understand. I can barely sit still long enough to give the talk, so I can't imagine listening to it. I brought some ringers, man. I brought a choir with me, so, and they were all heavies, and it was kind of fun because we were able to taunt Justin, who was giving a speech at the same time in the room next to us, through not only song, but also at one point in time, I think I actually opened the divider and asked his audience if they wanted to come over and hear my speech instead.
Wow, taunting Justin is always okay. Yeah, no, a 6-point show.
There's a lot of love there. I mean, like I said, taunting would be more or less just share the love. And what we should have done, if we were smart, is just say fuck it and like combine both of our talks and just done, you know, an hour of both of us with the combined audience.
Well, maybe next time. Are you at Boston this year, or are you skipping this how? Or
I am not at Boston. They have a tendency to use me until people realize that I swear like a sailor, and then they cut me off for a couple of years until people forget about that, and they invite me back.
Yeah, and I think the other time was this last year being in Chicago, and you having Grip Design there in Chicago. I think part of the reason is they're like, well, if we book him, we don't have to pay for a plane ticket. I think they're just looking to save about $300.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get invited to speak as soon as it's in Omaha, and not until then.
Right.
Which maybe never.
And a lot of the stuff that I talk about, I mean, I said this, you know, if I wanted to book a talk and have shit tons of people, you know, come, I'd call it Sex Practice. You know, it's Come See Sex Practice with Kevin McConkie at Howe. And everybody were like, you know, mouse your way to fitness, you know, shit like that. That's what people go to. Instead, the talks that I typically give are really hardcore. This is what we do exactly to win business. This is why I believe that design as a singular profession is kind of dead. And a lot of people, they don't want to hear that, and it's a little heavy. And, you know, when you're at a junket and your company's paying for it, let's face it, you want to, you know, see eye candy and get drunk.
That was probably what we were doing during your speech, actually.
Yeah. Fair enough, man. I mean, I don't begrudge you that one bit.
We'll be right back after this break. And we're back after that quote break unquote. We actually have one more question from Steve Gordon for you, Justin. Or was this from us? I don't remember.
Who knows?
He mentioned on the last show that you used to have a thing
where
Steve
stops and we begin sometimes.
Yeah. Over now you're at Grip Design. Is that gripdesign.com or did?
Yeah, we do business just as Grip, but it is gripdesign.com is our URL.
Okay, so it's Grip, but it's gripdesign.com.
You got it.
Grip.com is, we don't even want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, I'm sure it's not as dirty as you think. Actually, I know it's not as dirty as you think. But, yeah, that was one of those URLs that just went so fast. And even though we registered back in 1998, you know, it just was something that we, you know, somebody had already taken.
They had an internet back then? Anyways.
Yeah, they did. It was this, like, giant can with a string.
I think I had one of those.
Yeah.
Steve was saying that you used to start up your day over at Grip where you just talk and kind of roll slowly into the day. And I didn't quite believe it. I figured people walked in there and you just started cracking the whip.
Yeah, no. So here's the thing. And I won't name names on this because he's a friend of mine. But there's another company here in town. And they do awesome work. And they're kick-ass. But they're a mill. And people go there, they work for like a year or two, and then they leave just to have it on their resume. And
that sounds like Justin Aarons.
No, that's definitely not. No, this is a biggie.
That's
this is
Justin
like, this is, yeah, eight, this is 80 plus people. So anyway, and they have a saying there that's you have all the time you want because you have all night. And when I went there to pick this my friend up for lunch, you know, I saw they had vending machines in the back. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, that is bullshit. I mean, if you go to a place where you're expected to work all night, and then they make you pay like $2.50 for a fucking sandwich, I mean, like, how much does that actually make you over the course of a year? So one of the things that Kelly Kaminsky and I, the other owner here at Grip, instituted a long time ago was, we'll buy whatever breakfast food you want. And the reason why is because we know the designers are cheap, and we buy, I mean, you want granola with, you know, Greek yogurt and a banana, fine. We'll buy that. We have nice coffee. We have a great coffee machine because designers wake up, and rather than go to Starbucks or rather to go someplace else and get coffee, they roll straight into the office where they know they have any breakfast food they want. And as a result, they come in earlier. I mean, everybody here is at, you know, 8 maybe. I mean, 8:30 at the latest. They have breakfast. They shoot the shit. What movie do you watch? Blah, blah, blah. And then by 9 o'clock, they're at their desk cranking. And I mean, by cranking, I mean there is none of that downtime. And so we make the most of that early morning time. And I mean, 8 o'clock, again, I get here. I work from home in the first few hours of the day. And I get here after a lot of other people. So I don't know exactly how early they get here. But I know they get here pretty much as soon as they wake up because of the breakfast thing. And we did a little math on it, and I think it's like, I don't know, it's less than $10,000 a year to buy insanely great breakfast food and fill the freezer full of, like, frozen pizza.
Now, how many people is that you're talking?
8.
Oh, okay, because I was like, 10,000 for me, that's a lot of food.
Yeah, no, but I mean, we're pigs, and we eat expensive shit. So, I mean, another thing is we have so many clients that are in, like, food and wine and spirits that there's a tendency to have late afternoon munchies.
Okay, I was going to say, that's a lot of McMuffins.
And so. Speaking of that, you actually, I got the impromptu tour last year of your studio. Great space, by the way, if you guys ever make it to Chicago. Kevin's got a great spacer grip.
Yeah, by all means, invite all the listeners in.
Just
drop
up.
In.
So like 75 people show up tomorrow.
In fact, I would recommend showing up at about 8:30 when the breakfast is still rolling.
That's right.
Yeah. But don't you guys agree, though, about that? I mean, this is, again, this is not, you know, checkers. This is chess. You want people to be, like, highly motivated. You want people to want to come to work. And by providing a few things, like, we have a personal trainer that comes in once a week on Wednesdays. And it's in part because, you know, it's Chicago. It's cold in the winter. It's low light. And if everybody gets worked out, like, once a week, then they do their own workout a couple other times during the week. And next thing you know, everybody's feeling pretty good. You're feeling pretty fit. Everybody's happier. The attitudes are better. So you combine breakfast and a once-a-week workout, and I'm not shitting you. The work actually improves.
Yeah, we don't do the breakfast here, but we did bring in the bikes, and we'll ride on a bike trail, so we'll hit it like once or twice a day for 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh no, that's great. I ride my bike all the time, so I'm down with that.
But what I wanted to talk about is you said food and beverages. When we were there, you were having some vodka hanging around the office there.
Oh yeah, we've done work for several spirits companies actually, and they always do the same thing where they drop off like, hey, here's a few cases. Taste through this and let us know what you think. And we're always like, oh my God, there's 8 of us. There's like 15 bottles of booze here, you know.
Yeah, this won't last through the week.
Yeah, we're up to that challenge. So we do quite a bit of that, and it's fun. Those are clients that are really interesting packaging challenges because you can't obviously put vodka in a tall frosted glass bottle anymore. So you have to sort of look at the marketplace and reverse engineer something that's kind of interesting to hold, that has utility. And yeah, Death's Door is the ultra spirit or ultra premium spirits company that we work with on that project that you saw. But and we actually took an ownership stake in that company as well because we loved them so much. And it's probably one of our best success stories because at the time that we bought in, it was at $100 a share, and those same shares are now worth $1,800. So,
how do you go about pitching that you want an ownership of the client? Is that something they pitch to you, or is it something that you have to pitch to them first?
Oh man, that is such a huge question. That's probably like a whole other show, that's what my talk at How is about. And it's funny because, and to give kind of the brief sort of ish answer, every place I've ever worked, I've always made money for the people that I've worked for. And then I eventually got to the point where we started Grip because I was like, you know, we should make money for ourselves. And then we did work for our clients, and our clients made tons of money, and they paid us a set fee. And I realized the only way that you will ever have compensation that's in lockstep with your contribution is if you have some small ownership stake of that company, so that the work you do is in part reflected money-wise by their success in the marketplace. And I know this, you know, entire interview just took a massive downturn to the not funny, but the truth is we deserve more than what we get when we do a price per project model. Now, it's not to say that every client and every project is good for this.
Yeah, because if you're dealing with Coca-Cola, they're going to be like, we're not giving you anything. You're not going to own it.
But our secret sauce is to do 30% of our projects where we do fee plus equity, which is the equity model. 30% of our projects, we try and have things that we create and sell ourselves, and 40% is price per project or fee-based work. And that for us is a nice blend. So right now we have half a dozen companies that we have ownership stakes in, and basically we run almost like a small private equity firm with that equity stake, because once you do that work, you know, you have some monitoring and some auditing of board meetings and things like that you have to do. But I'm telling you what, it's like we're not in this office that you complimented. Thank you very much, by the way. We wouldn't be in here if we didn't have this model in place, because we took a nice deal with a company and sold off or liquidated our shares and bought a building, which we would not have been able to do had we just taken straight cash.
So is it you that has to pitch the equity model as a designer, or do you think it's something that the company has to kind of open up to you, and how do you go about just starting that conversation? I don't even know the details about it. Just how does it start?
I mean, we definitely bring it up. And the thing about it is when you do any type of equity model, you bet on the person, not the product. So when we looked at Death's Door Spirits, I looked at you know, they could not afford us. And so instead they could afford most of our fees, or half or so, but not all. So we proposed, because they were opening up a round of funding, that we take shares instead of, you know, fees. And we would take the fees that they could afford, because we can't cripple this company. They need to have cash flow to go to market. So it's a great deal for them. It's a great deal for us. But we definitely bring it up first. And that betting on the person thing, we looked at the president of Death's Door Spirits, for example. There was a guy named Brian Ellison, who he's an MBA. He was working, in sort of a land use planning facility where they talk about helping farmers out. He just had a great handle on what it took to be successful. And he wanted to bust his butt to make this product, a real hit. And he did that. And we bet on him, and we won big because of his dedication to the project. And with all the companies that we've invested in, we look at the founder and their management team, and we say, are these people that we want to get into bed with?
And is Death's Door Vodka something I can buy, like, all over the place, or is it still, like, is it a regional, is it a local?
Oh, no, it's all 50 states. As a matter of fact, the gin was Wine and Spirits Spirit of the Year a few years ago. The whiskey just won the most innovative new category for their white whiskey. They make three products. It's a gin, a vodka, and a white whiskey. It's available in all 50 states. It's widely accepted and able to be found.
All right. Well, our listeners, I guess that's what we're drinking for lunch.
Yeah, I just discovered what I want for breakfast, you know, when I come in here at 8 in the morning.
Yeah,
have
I guess
my whiskey ready.
Yeah.
I don't think that's exactly what he means about being ready to work at 9 in the morning.
I don't know. That's what I got out of it. But anyway.
I don't know, but we do a little smell check on Kelly's coffee cup, if that's any indication.
We'll be right back.
The office?
Oh man, this office has so much fucking booze. It's not even fun. I mean, we have our Arcadia Ales, which makes great ales. We have cases of that shit in the basement. We have a new tequila company, an ultra premium tequila that they dropped off a case of that. We do work with a company that does several. We've done several wine brands, and we have
basically like Mad Men, huh?
Yeah, you know what? Our Friday afternoons, I'm not going to joke, are pretty fun around here.
There's probably not the smoking of Mad Men. Not in the office.
You guys What's don't that? Smoke like Mad
Well,
Men.
It's law.
There's no, yeah, there's we're all non-smokers, so there's nobody that smokes here. Although we do always have to ask our interns as soon as they start, like, do you have any pot? Just to see what they say. You know, just dead serious. Like, you know, we really want to get high. Do you have any pot? It freaks them out every time, too, because they're like, we're like, just shut up. Just say yes. You know you do. We don't care.
All right, now, here's another question then. If you guys have all this, what type of alcohol client do you want to work with? Like, is there any type, if you've got tequila and gin and vodka, that you're like, man, is there any type that you're really missing that you need in the office that you need to get pitch a client?
Are we back live?
Oh, yeah, we're live.
Okay, right on. So anyway, is there a type of client? I don't know. We always have a saying around here, and this kind of changed our business model about 7 years ago, and that's if you want to do great work, you have to work with great people. And that's why we don't do any industry-specific work. So if you look at our portfolio, you don't see, hey, it's all hospitality, or it's all, you know, food, wine, and spirits, or it's all, I mean, we have everything in there. And that's because we really don't want to work with dicks. And we've decided that after years of doing, like, law firm branding and things like that, which is fine, it's lucrative, and working with a company like BP, we used to work for BP that sucked. I mean, we would do these projects that they'd pay for. And
was this pre or post Gulf spill?
Oh, way pre. This is like 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
This is back when they were, I think they were British Petroleum, not Beyond Petroleum. And it was, but our work, we could never tell if it moved their needle. So it was very unsatisfying, and it just wasn't anything that we were interested in doing. So we kind of changed our model to say, we want to have the person that we work with, not even the project, but the person be a really interesting person that was willing to take chances, that is willing to have us move the needle and potentially change their business. And once we started doing that, that's when the fee and equity model started to really come into play, because all of a sudden we said, hey, if we look for these people that know what our potential contribution could have on their bottom line, then they're interested in us from a business perspective, not just a design. And then the cool part is they actually allow us to do way, way more interesting projects. They allow us to push their brand into places that they never even thought it would go. Matter of fact, this is a kind of a funny story. we were meeting, we have Whole Foods as a client of ours, and we were doing a campaign for them for Valentine's Day, and they were talking about how back in the day they were much more sort of irreverent, and they had this really, you know, kind of indie voice and messaging. And as they've become kind of the man, you know, they have lost that and they wanted to regain it. And one of the campaign headlines was something like, because we were trying to encourage people to spend Valentine's Day at home and shop at Whole Foods instead. And one of our lines was something like, be as dirty as your dishes. And they loved it. And so, but the fact that we met those people and they were really interested in how we could change them and weren't interested in giving us a ton of barriers, then that was a great project. And we did some really interesting work for them. And they gave us a metric to hit as far as conversions, or cash register rings, they call it. And we surpassed it. We actually beat their projections, what they asked for us. And that's just the case where they asked something for us to hit. We said, okay, but we want to be, you know, free to do it how we see fit. They said, fine. We did it our way, and it worked. And everybody's happy. They just engaged us again to do a new campaign for them.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. You'd love it. We got a Whole Foods just down the block here, but it's in the rich area of town, so people go in there like wearing furs sometimes.
Yeah, Omaha.
Those were nationwide Whole Foods, and you're still working with them, I take it?
Yeah, this is, we do the center region, so it's from Canada to Florida, kind of right in the middle. But then anytime you work with a Whole Foods, they do most of the national stuff from an in-house office. But if a region is successful, they do take that campaign and make it national. So, and our Valentine's Day stuff, I mean, it was, you know, like the social on that extended all the way to Ireland. So it was even beyond the U.S. stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun. Those guys are great. We love those guys.
I know they had Whole Foods in Ireland. That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know either, but somebody was tweeting Valentine's at home over there and referencing Whole Foods, so we were pretty happy about it.
Love it. All right, we're going to take one last break, and then we're going to wrap this up with Kevin here in McConkie. And we are back here with Kevin McConkie, Grip Design.
Hello.
Grip, sorry, no design anymore. I'm just, I hear URLs design. It gets thrown off, right? They do more than design.
Pardon?
They do more than design, Ben.
That's true.
See, here's the thing, is that I give this talk a lot and it always freaks people out because I say the same thing. I say, you know, graphic design as a singular skill set or, you know, profession is dead. And the reason why is because we have had an unprecedented ability to extend design thinking into aspects and parts of businesses that used to be controlled by marketing. So now you can have somebody who is a graphic designer doing way, like our folks here do a lot of copywriting, they do a lot of strategic work, they really think of how something will be impacted. So they're trying to relate to people that they are not, which is, I think, the next great skill in the evolution of design. But one of the things that we always say is that, you know, the design part is the last 10%. I mean, that's the execution. But what happens before you get to the design part, that is really what people, that's where the value is. That's why people pay Grip more than they would pay somebody who has a copy of InDesign working out of their mom's room. So, I mean, it's like completely different altogether the way that we are approaching our work. And I recommend that unless you want to enter that commoditized marketplace where, and by commoditized, I mean people look at executions as something that anybody can do, so they pay less and less for it. That is never going back the other way. So I always think that, you know, you really need to consider what you're doing as way more than just design. And that's why we do business as Grip, not Grip Design.
No, I mean, that makes sense. And but I said you also do more. You guys even wrote a book on packaging for Rockport, right?
We did.
What's the book's name?
It's 1,000. Well, the book's name should have been 200 Awesome Packages. Instead, it's 1,000 Package Designs. It's part of their 1,000 series, which the only reason why I say that is not because there's less than 1,000 great packages in there, but I say that because there is a lot of work to get 1,000 of anything in a book. And it's just, we photographed everything, so that was a whole other component.
No, I got it immediately. You said 1,000. I was like, whoa, that was fun collecting.
Yeah, although, you know, the cool part about that project was a complete side benefit that we didn't expect going into it, but turned out to be really fun, is that people sent us actual product that we had a photograph or that they were submitting for the book. So we have this giant stack of stuff. I mean, like 5,000 people submitted stuff, or maybe even more. And so we had all this, and some people sent it electronically, but a lot, a great percentage, sent it physical. And they sent it for us to keep as samples. So after the book was done, and we worked with Emily Potts from Rockport, who we love, 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 and her whole crew, Winnie and everybody, are fantastic. But when we got all this stuff, we invited them all up, and they said no. So we divided it all up on this giant table. We drew cards, and we had a pecking order, like a draft. And we got to go through all this stuff and pick out what we wanted. Then we each had this giant pile, and all of our families got kick-ass, super well-designed Christmas gifts that year because we had all this free shit that we could give away.
All right, what was your personal favorite item, and what was the weirdest item?
Wow, that's a good question. My personal favorite, there was this, it was kind of a, it was a grill accessory. It was this thing that you took out to help you grill like ribs, and it was a rib rack basically. And then that's just because I have a smoker at home, and you know, it was really handy. So that's not really a great answer. I should say something like by the folks at Fred, which they had, you know, fortune cookie magic eight balls, which are hilarious, and their packaging was real fun. There was a lot of interesting stuff from those guys. But probably the weirdest, I mean, there was a lot of ugly stuff. There was all this holiday music CDs from this.
Oh, no, I mean, I don't mean the ugliest stuff. I meant, like, what's just the weirdest item? Like, was there anything that was just like, why would anyone even buy this?
I sense you're fishing for dildo, but there was no dildos in our.
No, I figured, that was actually, that was what I was expecting for you to hear on the, what was your favorite item?
Yeah, I'm using it right now. can you hear that low hum in the background? No. I don't really know what the weirdest was. To be totally honest, that book was like 5 years ago, so my memory's a little foggy on that, believe it or not. But I just remember it being a lot of work, and it was immensely fun when it was done.
All right, well, all of this rib racking, all of this vodka, all of this
breakfast,
I think we're going to hit an early lunch here.
Yeah, obviously. And for the record, this interview, just so you guys know, I would be way funnier, but we're having it on a Friday morning at like 9:30 in the morning. So this is, I guess, around this office, what we call pre-drunk. So you're not getting me at my best.
Damn it. Well, what we want to do is, before we do this, since we're thinking about lunch already, you also do a lot of restaurant work. Like, I think when I was there, I was seeing some comps. I don't know if it was done yet. For a restaurant for, you said, the winner of Top Chef, was it? There's so many cooking shows, I don't know which is which.
Right.
Yeah, it's Stephanie's Place, Girl and the Goat. We do restaurant work. Restaurant work is incredibly non-lucrative, just for the record. I would not encourage anybody to do restaurant work. It's something that there's a lot of last-minute stuff that has to be done. We do it because we work with a restaurant group, actually a couple of them, that are just extremely professional people, and they open up chef-driven restaurants of the highest order, and they just sort of have everything dialed in, and it allows us to have a distinct home field advantage when we take clients out. So I can call up any one of the hottest restaurants in town that are booked, I'm talking like 3-6 months in advance, and I can get a table that night, you know, whenever I want. And that is
3-6 months. I don't even wait 5 minutes at Taco Bell.
Oh yeah, well, that's because you're Taco Bell, brother. But yeah, no.
Oh, I see.
Girl and the Goat, is that restaurant is so insanely packed. I mean, you can't get a reservation. It's just, you have to, it's like one of those where you have to wait, and you know, then you sign up an open table the second like the next month opens up. But yeah, I mean, if you want to wait 3 months, you can get in, but it's just, you know, I don't want that, and I want our clients to feel like there's something special when we go there. And you know, or one of our favorite restaurants, GT, or all these, and another friend of ours, Paul Barant, who's got a Michelin star, he's got a restaurant that we did their work for. So just being able to get that kind of extra special treatment, the chef comes out, they send a few comp dishes, that type of stuff, you'd be shocked at how much that impresses a client, and it has nothing to do with your work. Matter of fact, the more we get into this, the more I realize that, you know, you show your work on your site, but it's all the X factors that are why people hire you. You know, they hire you for, you know, your ability to think, your ability to engage with them personally, some of this, you know, pomp and circumstance of dining out and stuff like that. At least at the level that we've been at these last few years, it really is a much bigger business than it has been in the past, where it's like, yeah, we're really good at this thing, hire us to do this thing. That's, again, just less and less important as it is the jobs getting bigger and bigger.
No, and that makes complete sense. But it does. Now, the thing that I'm trying to figure out is, if these places are booked 6 months ahead of time, how is the work not lucrative? Is it just because they don't, it's such a fun project to do, they just don't need to pay more, or?
You're exactly right. I mean, to do Girl and the Goat, there would be 100 firms in this town that would want to do that work. It's kind of fun work. It's interesting. You know, one of the best benefits is, and this is sort of a benefit and a problem why we have a personal trainer, is that you go to a lot of test dinners where they go and they do what's called friends and family, and they come in and they test service. They test different foods. When they were opening another restaurant, GT Fish and Oyster, which is a fantastic restaurant here in town, they had me come with some of the general managers and the owners and a couple other chefs from out of town, and they tasted us on all the menu items on like 3 or 4 different versions. So we had like fish and chips, like 4 different kinds, and under each plate was a number, and you'd eat them, and then they'd say, okay, well, comment on this, what do you think? And you'd comment on which one that you liked. Matter of fact, there was one of the times they videotaped us doing that, and I had one quote that kind of got around the little food media here. And we were eating these fish and chips, and there was one that was just heads and tails better than anything else. And I kind of said this offhandedly, and I didn't think it would be quite so popular, but I said, this is the fish and chips that other fish and chips think about when they masturbate. And it was picked up by a lot of media, and I kind of became known for that quote, which was not probably the best quote to be known for, but I'll tell you what, those were fucking good fish and chips.
Man.
Apparently.
Okay, we're going to take a long lunch. It's going to be an early lunch. But I will say, one of the best meals I ever had was last year. You took us out to some sushi restaurant there in Chicago right before we did the impromptu studio tour. And I don't even really eat sushi, and that place was incredible. So Kevin and Justin, who were with us, those two guys, they know their food.
Oh, yeah, no, that was a Rami. That place is great. That's, you're not going to get, a matter of fact, last time I was there, I went there and saw Jiro Dreams of Sushi. And I don't know if you know that movie, but it's about a sushi master in Hong Kong. And Tokyo, I apologize. And it was just a great night out. It was really fun.
Love it. All right, well, it's been fantastic, Kevin. Kevin McConkey from Grip.
Hey.
Chicago. Hopefully we'll run into you soon. And yeah. That's it.
Comments,
36point.com. What?
I'm due for a visit out to Omaha, so get your AIGA to cough up a plane ticket.
Man, ever since I left the board, I don't have any real input there anymore. But they need to have you out.
Yeah, I got a Jones for a Runza. Speaking of your lunch, man.
Man, and we are like 2 blocks from Runza at our new office. I mean,
hey, you got to just describe real fast what the Runza is to those people who don't know about Nebraska.
I just assume everyone knows what a Runza is.
Yeah, no, actually, they don't, because you mentioned that here, and it sounds like it's a dirty word. But I mean, when you're in Omaha or Lincoln, and you're in a football stadium full of like insanely drunk people, like 8 in the morning, and someone offers you a hot steaming loaf packed with meat, it's insanely good.
Yeah, and if you go to see Husker games here, you walk into that stadium and it smells like these Runza, they now call them oven baked sandwiches, but it's this baked, basically small loaf of bread, and inside it is packed with beef.
Goodness.
And cabbage and onions.
They now have cheese ones too, though.
Well, they've had cheese in a while, but I mean the Runza itself is beef, cabbage, onions. Although I think most people get cheese in there as well, right. And then you just bake it. You can actually go to. I think they have Runza.com or something. You can actually go and order frozen ones and have them shipped to you and then bake them yourself.
Bake them yourself.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's kind of like a hot dog in a ballpark where you got to be there to really
love. Right. You got to be very drunk to enjoy it.
I think it's actually with the cabbage and stuff. I think it's a German thing because my mom used to make them. You know,
I've had homemade ones more than the store bought ones.
It may be an early lunch and it may be at Runza.
That's right.
Ben, you're going to get some beef in a bun with cabbage.
There you go. Sounds great. Sounds very Nebraska.
Kevin, you're going to get a frozen one.
Fair enough, man. I'll take it.
All right.
Good having you on.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks for doing the show. We appreciate it. Give a shout out to my buddy Steve out there. And like I said, I'd love to see you guys. So find a way to make that happen.